Ruby Devine is a 23-year industry veteran, hairstylist, and owner of The Laboratory, a Ruby Devine salon. She's also the international educator for Danger Jones Collective and the ambassador for three companies, Antidot Pro, Olivia Garden, and B3. Today, we're going to hear about her story, how she got here, and what she's doing now. Welcome back to the Hairdresser Strong Show. My name is Robert Hughes, and I am your host. And today, I'm with Ruby Devine. How are you doing today, Ruby?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me today.
Thank you for coming. I'm very excited about today. So if anybody listening or watching, Ruby is a owner and stylist in the DMV area. She's local to my hood. And so I always like to include like once a month, at least a local stylist or entrepreneur in the industry. And so I'm excited and to have you on. And I was checking you out and doing a little deeper dive than I've done on you before. And I saw you doing all this education. I had no idea. And when we talked, when we were at that axe throwing event, that didn't even come up. You were asking me about classes. So I want to hear your story. And I want to hear all about it. But why don't we first start with how you got into hair, and did you do an apprenticeship program? Did you go to school? And then start from there, kind of to you becoming a salon owner, an educator, and ambassador.
So I think it's always important. I like to tell my story because hopefully it's like inspiring to somebody else. I think we've got social media a lot as a platform. So I believe that in the beginning days of me doing like education and sharing my story, it was a little bit more unique and maybe other people didn't hear that. But my story maybe looks like others. I was, I skirted by in high school, barely graduated. And probably only because like some people liked me well enough. I certainly didn't get the grades for it. And like a lot of like future hairdressers, I took like seven periods of art class my senior year, Burger King was my first period of class and it shouldn't have been, those kind of things. So I was lucky to even make it out. And my dreams had always been from like very young to be a clothing designer. I'm lucky to say that my mom has always been very supportive. She said, I want my kids to be a rock star, whatever that means. And so that's kind of cool. So like to see myself now, but she would say, I don't care if you're a trash, a trash man, own the trash company. That's the kind of work ethics and expectation that was instilled. Later on, maybe me looking rebellious in school was just like my lack of ability to focus and maybe my inability to retain information that later on would be realized, as many of us do, it makes sense that I had those issues. But in the meantime, I didn't have the grades to go to this fashion design school that I had my high hopes set on. And it was very expensive. It's a private school. And when I applied, because of my GPA being so low, it was very expensive. And my mom was like, I can't afford to co-sign for a loan for that. And so the local, I went to the local college in town, traditional college, and quickly failed out of that after the first semester. And so then I went to the local like technical school, like around here, it would be like Nova or something. And they had a cosmetology program. And at that point we were so low income my whole life. I had very low expectations of what a hairdresser did. I didn't even really know what that was, or a hairstylist, whatever a cosmetologist would. I knew you did hair. I had no idea other than that. Maybe you did perms and hair cutting. And I also, the examples that I had of hairstylists I didn't have a really good, like a lot of Americans, I just like, well, they're not very smart people and I'm not a very smart person. So I could at least do that. I'll get this trade under my belt that will allow me to be able to have something that I can do. And I'll be able to get this GPA up so I can reapply for scholarships to this school that I wanted to go to. And so that's what it was. I remember sitting in the first day when they're like introducing everybody and talking about like, why are you here? And, the stories of like, oh, I've wanted to be a hairdresser since I was a little girl. And I was like, so embarrassed and mortified that this was not my dream path. Like it was just like a means to an end. And the very first week, my cosmetology instructor brings in like, this old school, like the TV on the big, with the VCR player. And he plays this hair show. Well, it was a fashion show, and he had done all the hair on it, but he had also done these big, elaborate, like Star Trek version type wardrobe, and he had done all the fashion. And it was this click moment of like, oh wow, like you could do all of this stuff. And also, I didn't know until I opened a Milady Standard to know that like I could do nails, I could do makeup, I could do all these other things. And again, like clicking to like attention issues, like all of that, like just spoke to me so loud. I was like, great, I'm never going to get bored in this job. Like, there's always more opportunities for me. And so that was 23 years ago. I ended up being like one of the top ones in my class. I excelled pretty quickly. And all of the information that my entire life to read a textbook never would stick, it all stuck with this. So for whatever reason, it spoke to me. I obviously feel bad. And I think that's important for me to tell my story. Hairdressers are not dumb. They're the opposite of all those things. But you know, that's what a lot of society would lead us to believe. And that's what I had. So that's my long story of how I became a hairdresser and where I am now, 23 years ago. Yeah.
I love this. When I was coming up, I also felt, or actually, no, you know what happened? I was working for PR Partners. They have, 15 locations, an artistic team, an education team, and I was on it. And the owner would take us to London to check the show and check the latest trends, and then we would come back and like make our own collection. While I was over there, I was like so excited. The first time I ever went, I was so excited to go, and I felt very lucky too because I was pretty new to the company. And anyway, I noticed that over in London, hairdressers were more like chefs here, and they like there's like there's such a respect for chefs. If you got I'm assuming that you have a nice kitchen or a nice restaurant. I mean, you do a good job, but I noticed that they were like kind of like then chefs are kind of like rock stars. Like if anybody who's a foodie or been in the business, it's like there's a lot of appreciation and respect for them. And I didn't feel that way about hairdressers and in the U.S. So I've always wanted to see the esteem or regard that the public held for us to be elevated more along the lines of what I experienced when I was in London. So I'm glad that you brought that up because I agree that I think that a lot of people, like I dated somebody and their mother was like, you're dating a hairdresser? She's like, yeah. I was like, is he gay? Like what? Like why? How do you jump to these conclusions? Like she had this idea of what it was in her head about a hairdresser. So I'm glad you brought that up because I agree. I've met some of the smartest, most creative, most interesting, and caring people in this industry. And so anyway, okay. So you go through school, you get on the floor, you do an apprentice, do you do some training? Like what happens after you get out of school?
So at the time I was in South Carolina, and it's important. At that time, I don't know how things have evolved. So like literally I have two girls that are getting ready to stand state board here. And I was teasing about like, I almost kind of want to go and just like force my way in and see if I could even pass the state board exam. I'm like, I don't even know. I feel so far removed from that part in my life. And I'm blessed to say that, but South Carolina at the time, you couldn't be on the floor at all. There was no assisting program. They didn't allow for non-licensed people to be touching clients. Like you couldn't
Wow.
even take a roller out of the head. California was the same at the time. So assisting programs wasn't a thing. You were just like spat right out of school. And I also was in a small town. I was in Beaufort, South Carolina, which is still a predominantly small town. And that probably had something to do with it. It's just like you're a hairdresser, it's a trade, right? I went right out of school to a small salon, boutique salon, and very quickly was like, it's just so funny. Like, I don't even remember the name of it. I have a vague memory of it. It definitely, there were elements of it in the short amount of time that I was there, but essentially I was assisting. They weren't having me do any clients. I was just kind of shadowing, but I was already licensed. And then I went on to a salon where my girlfriends were working at the time was very cutting edge with a, hot rock star, good looking young straight male hairdresser who was like the lead stylist. It was a family owned salon, and he was, he had only been doing five hair for 5 years at that time. The funny thing about that is I remember coming in and being like, Wow. When I'm doing hair, but for 5 years, you know, like it seemed like such a long time at that time. And then he was like such a senior, amazing hairdresser. And his mother had been doing hair for eons. They had started their salon in her house. And then he had these dreams of this salon and spa that really was not ever there. It was an Aveda salon. And it was really cool the way it was set up and stuff. But I feel like that was a really great foundation building for me because it had so many elements. They had this young, budding, again, good looking male hairdresser that was like all about town. And he brought in a lot of cool clients. And then his mom, that was this older classic hairstylist that had, you know, she would have the hood dryers lined up with ladies asleep under it. You know, she was doing like five and six perms a day. And I had started at the salon with two of my other best friends. So we were three very new hairdressers and him. I believe that that's a lot of my foundation in believing that collaboration could happen in a hair salon because I had my two girlfriends. There was a lot of moments of us like sitting around and collaborating and figuring out how we were going to execute a client's hair together and being genuinely excited for each other. We had him who was just like so good at like selling snake oil, if you will. Like I learned a lot of that kind of stuff of like the client that would go, you know, I'd go to wash out for him and they go, oh, well, you know, he mixes up a special treatment for me. And I'd go back and he's like, I don't know, put some conditioner in a bowl and massage it into their scalp. So like some like really, but I mean, really honestly, like some of that stuff. And then when I was the other girls would be slow and they would leave and go shopping or something. They didn't have any clients. I would go to his mama and I would watch and I would just learn. And she would take me into the back and she would show me at that time, like archaic styles of doing hair, like, you know, very 80s haircuts, perm sets, roller sets. And then at some point, she became ill. Don't know what miraculous, like just ill for everything. Anything made her sick. You know, again, the lady was doing still five perms at a time in a day in 2002 or 2001 or whatever. So Lord knows why. But here I was, 21 years old, barely 21 years old, and she had some of these clients for 36 years that would come in every week for their roller sets and their perm sets every month, and I was getting all those clients because she said Ruby could do it for you. So like all of a sudden, I got this like, you know, outside, right? What is the rule of thumb? They say something like four years up and 4 years down as a hairstylist when you're starting and you're building your clientele. That's going to be kind of like your clients are going to kind of look like you. Well, this was a very much example of that not being true at all in a lot of ways. In the meantime, also, I had these dreams of wanting to be a makeup artist because, again, attention issues and loving this idea of doing all these things and having all these plates spinning. I was working at a restaurant. I was working at the hair salon, and then I had gotten an opportunity to become a house mom. If you guys don't know what a house mom is, I didn't know. I was 21 years old. I had never been to an adult nightclub, and I would go and I would do hair and makeup. I would do minor mending on wardrobe. I would, you know, help gather money with rubber bands. I would have body sprays and you know, potions and lotions and things. I was basically like a glorified bathroom attendant that would sit in the dressing room at this nightclub and help these girls out on the weekends. And that was a secondary thing that allowed me to learn and practice and do things that were way outside the box. So you've got this weird paradigm of me working now in a club like that, that I would drive 45 minutes outside of town to go to. And then I would do all Miss Carol's old clients. And then I was doing that. So I did that in the very beginning stages of my career. I was like, my hands were in everything possible. I was just a sponge. I was absolutely, I had the most crazy, now even saying it back, I was like, well, that was sometimes, you know, work ethics, again, established from my mama, right? Like it's like it's what you should do. I've said this before. When I first started doing any of this education or even doing podcasts and stuff, and I would get a lot of acclaim for being live and broadcasting and teaching and sharing. And I'd be in my lab at 2 o'clock in the morning. And people were just like, wow, you're hardworking. And I was like, I always likened it to like congratulating a dad for paying his child support on time. I'm like, well, I'm just doing what I'm supposed to do. Like, I appreciate it, but like you should want to. Like I there's nothing I want to do more than trying to be better than I was yesterday, especially when it comes to hair. So all of that started in those very early days of working in these crazy scenarios, picking up any possible, always saying yes, never saying no. And so that was it. No, I did not get an opportunity to have an assisting, a formal assisting program, but I believe that I kind of curated that in my own way by doing things the way I did it.
Nice. I love this. This is so fun. It's crazy 'cause I feel like there's so many similarities and parallels that I experienced coming up too, like having your hands and everything. I love that. I feel like that experience is so powerful to help shape your future. It's like, oh, maybe I want to do photo shoots. So like go do some photo shoots. Go find photographers and models and produce a photo shoot and then see if you like doing photo shoots and fashion shows. And that's awesome. That's so cool. Okay, so you get out of school, you end up taking clients right away. And how long did you work there? And what was the next step?
I worked there, I guess, for kind of like probably a year. I definitely worked there for a year, and it's funny because I think back, again, there was no apprenticeship, there was none of that. It was just kind of like throw you on the floor, and if you had balls big enough, you're gonna like take any walk-in that walks in. And my very first, I'm like laughing because I'm thinking about this, and I think about that in my team with my salon because of the way that I've grown my team and how I hope it looks different than how I grew up, but. Doing that client, I had a walk-in. This is like the craziness, the audacity. She had her kids' baptism the very next day, and it's a walk-in. Now, granted, did we have maybe a level system or any kind of identification of me being a junior stylist? Maybe not. Maybe she was trusting the salon wasn't not going to give her to a novice. But I remember, and you remember, man, those early 2000s, we love disconnection and shattered cutting and everything was, we would call it divorced hair cutting, right? Like the predecessors of the Karen haircut. And this lady had a cut maybe similar to mine, but she had really thick, dense, diametered hair, the really thick. It's almost like the size of a pencil. And I'm going in, I'm texturizing, I'm giving her layers, and I'm using texturizing shears and just chewing away at her head. And I turn her around and she's like, oh, I don't like there's a skip in the layer here. So what do? I like pick up the texturizing shears and I keep going at it. And I'm just making a bigger and bigger hole in this lady's hair. And I remember like she's like beside herself at this point. She's looking in the mirror and I walk over to that man that I was telling you about, the king of charm, and he takes over for me and I just cried hysterical in the back room. Thank God there was a spa area that was quiet. Nobody could hear me. And I was like, I'm just gonna leave. I'm never coming back. But like again, like not having that guidance and not having anybody to like show you through or to like allow you to have like training wheels into the industry was kind of crazy. So I'm like, sometimes I'm like, wow, I really made it. Okay, that's good. Thank God I had people that would allow me to do things like that. You got to be able to mess up and you got to be able to make mistakes and have the courage, I guess, to do it and to do it again the next time after you do mess up. But yeah, so from there, that was it. I worked there for like that year, and then my parents had moved to California, and I followed them there. And at the time, reciprocity wasn't a thing in California, so I had to wait a whole year because paperwork, we all know how, state boards like to be. Regardless, it doesn't matter what state. And I had to wait a whole year, and I had to stand their state board. And their state board at the time was super intimidating, super rad, but super intimidating. I'm sure it's not like this anymore, but you would walk in, and it was their setup was a mini salon. You had to bring in a human model with you. In South Carolina, it was a head, and you knew exactly it was 20 minutes for this. Yada yada. You went down the line, and this you had your real human model, and you would have three options in each subcategory, and you had to know each one of those because on that day you would come in, you had a station set up, you would bag all of your stuff. Most people would go across the street to some place that was known for like selling, renting out these pre-made kits because God forbid you tried to do that on your own, and you offload all your stuff. And then you walk over and you open up an appointment book, and that was your test. You had to go through it almost as if in real time you were in a hair salon, which in theory is rad. I mean, I love that concept, but Terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. And I was already a licensed hairdresser at this point. And I remember thinking, like, wow, like this is really, really crazy. I remember doing like our season S's, which I don't even know that the kids have to do anymore. And I was coming down to the wire with my little pin curl clips, and the instructor's calling time as she's walking up to me. And I just grabbed the last chunk of hair and just wad it and put a clip in it. And I looked at her and I said, "It's done." She said, "Yes, ma'am, it is. You can take it down." And then I had to do like a nail. I've never done nails, like actually put like a tip on my model. And I'm like trying to get the glue out, and it was stuck. And all of a sudden, all the glue like pours out over her finger. And I'm holding it, and I was like, "All right, I'm just gonna buff the crap out of it." I'm buffing it. I'm like, "Okay, it looks good." And I'm like, I'm completely stuck to her. I'm completely stuck to her at this point. I was like, I peel myself off of her. I buff down as much as I can. And then when they come over to check it, it looks decent. She flips it over. It's just like nothing but glue and buildup all
Oh.
underneath it. I'm like, but somehow I passed that. So that was crazy. But it took me a whole year. And in that year's time, I had to find work again. My same work ethics hadn't changed, and my drive and to work. So I actually worked as a Life Touch photographer for a year, which was so funny. If you guys don't know Life Touch, it's like it's the school yearbook like company. You know everybody, Life Touch and Olin Mills, I think, is the other one. So I would go in, and of course, you know, here I'm a hairdresser, right? A brand new hairdresser at that. And I'm like going over and like wanting to fix the kids' hair and like do all of this stuff. It really was interesting. But the other part of that was I was a licensed hairdresser. So a lot of my building blocks to my business at that point was built there. I would set up shop in the warehouse of the photography studio, and I would do hair. I got connected with photographers that would later be my introduction to doing photo shoots and doing editorial work. It was like thinking outside the box, finding that something that kind of ran parallel with my industry, because again, I had to take a whole year off. I had no other option. I mean, other than to do hair illegally, right? But like, so I was doing like kitchen hair essentially at that point. I think that was actually really cool too, like an accidental pivot, but like to bring it on back. After that, I went to work at a hair salon that I was tech kind of my only soiree into being like an assistant. And it was these two very hard ass women in the very, it's called Hillcrest in San Diego. It's like the gay Mecca of San Diego. I remember the lead singer of Judas Priest would walk up and down, like he would go to the spa bathhouse. Are we allowed to say that on here? It was like on the same road. And I was like, isn't that the guy from, you know? So, and it was an Aveda salon, and they were very regimented, and they were very like very hard ass. I mean, the lady would walk over and like shake the shampoo bottles after I was like shampooing a client to say I was using too much product. You know, these kind of like really hardcore, they really broke me down a lot, and they taught me how to not be to an assistant and how not to be to somebody that's like, you know, but I still learned some stuff in that. And I actually created a bond with some great people that ended up being my coworkers and my mentors after that. So right from there, I went to booth renting, terrified. I didn't even know the understand the idea of being my own business. But California is really big on booth renting, and that kind of was the only other like option that made sense. So parallel, I'm working at Life Touch still because it's supplementing my income, and I've got this business as I'm that I'm building at a booth rental salon. We had 25 hairstylists, all women, which is so crazy to think of that. And it was in a very young, it was all a bunch of younger girls, and it was like these were all the queens of the chunky highlights and what then became seen. And I was just older enough than everybody that some of that stuff was missed on me, and that's when MySpace kind of started to happen. And during that time, I got on MySpace, and that's kind of funny too, because that would bring it all back. And I don't know if we're gonna get to that in this, but social media, that really was when we started, you know, utilizing social media. And we happened to get this receptionist that was a San Diego State sorority girl, And I really feel like that took me off. Like she was out of everybody I knew to vulture like that. Like she needed to be my client, and she was going to tell all of her homies that Ruby did her hair. And that really was it. I became like known amongst all these sororities and fraternities for that. And then I was like 24, I guess, on MySpace when everybody else was like 14 to 18 on MySpace. And I was using it to market myself, and nobody else really was. It was like me and Jeffree Star and Forbidden. If anybody else, Tila Tequila, you know, that was in your mom's top eight. I was trying, man. I was trying so hard. Yeah.
This is all in California still,
That was
right?
all in California.
How long were you in California?
Until 2006, and I moved up here.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when you moved here, did you go straight into salon ownership?
No, so I went into a commission hair salon here. I found a at that point I was a network educator for Bumble and Bumble, and that would really be like my original stepping stones of like education and learning that. It's so crazy because I still remember going. We had like a big retail competition, and it's also funny to the contrast and how Bumble is now as a product line now. But at that time, to even have the salon, we didn't. The salon became a Bumble salon while I was working there, and they, you know, shipped this person in with like a Tabitha coffee haircut and black, you know, whatever from New York to come and like make sure our salon qualified, you know, because back then I think they had like 1800 salons that and you they couldn't be within X amount of square. And there was this whole thing that was it was cool. It was like prestigious, like you were the cool kids. And she like laying down on the floor and like taking pictures of the salon and like cool angles and like, you know, checking the books and all that stuff. And so we had like this opportunity to become an educator. Which is so weird too, because I don't remember, and I guess it must go back to like my mom with the rock star thing. I mean, I've always loved to dance, and I was not afraid of being in public, like, but I was not like a like I wasn't like a theater kid necessarily. Like to get up and talk in front of people was terrifying, but for whatever reason, I was called to want to do this education. I think maybe it was more like the competition. I feel like maybe that's really what it was like I just wanted so bad to be the best, and I identified those educators and things like that as being like the best. Not necessarily like a pick me, like I wanted to be on stage. I just wanted to sit and be able to be invited to the same dinner table as like people that I thought were awesome, like going to hair shows and seeing these people and I feeling like, you know, like light would emit from them. They were so neat, you know, and like Robert Chromians at that time. And like my very first hair show ever actually was Bronner Brothers hair show in Atlanta. It's like the Black American hair show. And I remember walking in, and this girl is on stage sewing and weave. She looked like Aaliyah with like a crop and like abs and sewing it to Mystical. If anybody remembers that was a long time ago. Like, and I was like, oh my gosh, I want to be just like that. You know, like there was something about that, like more of like the flex of being able to say, like, well, I'm good enough to be next to those people, not necessarily to be like, hey, look at me. You know, I don't know. It's interesting. So for whatever reason, I was called to do that. And it was a retail competition to become an educator to go to New York. So I remember going, and they had like education classes to teach you how to be a teacher or an educator. And even though the way that it was then, I don't know that it is like this anymore, but you were a network educator. So you would go be shipped off to learn how to be an educator. And then you would be a representative for Bumble, a liaison from Bumble to your salon. So just teaching classes in your salon. And I just remember being so terrified to like talk in front of this room of people. Obviously, they were all cool and they were super intimidating to me. So to go on stages now and to be very comfortable, it's like I still remember that scared girl, and it's wild to think that like it's such a distant memory and I can't even recall that, but that was my beginning. So from there I had moved here, and so I had that as a way to like kind of get my ends with the salons, and I looked for a Bumble salon. I looked for a salon that had Goldwell because I had been with Goldwell since 2000 in th since no since 2000 when I started beauty school. And I was hired within 6 days at a salon. It's not to say that that's great around here, but you know, I was hired. So I just went right into a commission hair salon. I didn't know any different. There really isn't anything other than that around here at the time. I don't think so. I think you can attest to that as well. So I worked there. At the time, I actually was there for almost a year. I was miserable here. I had crazy crazy hair, and a lot of our clients worked at like the US Patents Office, and it was a very I would tell people, they were like, "Oh, it's so much more conservative here." And I would say, think, you know, San Diego is full of a lot of blonde hair, blue-eyed Republican people. I mean, it's very conservative in a lot of regards. It's not conservative, it's formal. Here in DC, I mean, it's so formal. You dress a certain way for the job. You wear your hair a certain way for the job. I learned from a master barber that I worked at with at that salon. She had been a barber on the Hill, and she would talk about the DC tuck. And I don't know that that's true anymore, but maybe if when I say this to you, you're going to be like, "Oh yes, this concept that in the animal culture or that the animal world, that a sign of strength is to show your ears." And so that's why men will often have short cropped hair, or females that are in positions of power. And you think back to like Sarah Palin, when she would go on stage, she would always have that signature where her hair would be pulled back and her ears would be exposed. Even thinking back to like old Hillary Clinton's, I always remember thinking her hair would be blown out specifically with her ears exposed. So there was these like weird nuance formalities, I feel like, in doing hair here, that was a direct contrast of me with my desert rat friends in San Diego that were getting, you know, the Kelly Clarksons and like fun adventurous hair colors. And so I hated it. I was like, I am a weirdo. I would color my eyebrows red when I was here. I was weird. I had hair very similar to now. So at about a year, I went home just to visit for the first time, and I stopped into that old salon. And while I was there, the owner was just chatting, and a phone call comes in for one of my old clients who was like still looking to try to find a better match for herself. And she's like, "Well, actually, guess who's standing here?" and passes the phone to me. And from there, a conversation happened about me becoming bicoastal. So for about 3 years after that, I actually flew back and forth, and I would work here for a week, and I would work in San Diego for 3 weeks. And I was booth renting there at that salon, and I was sharing a station with a girl, and I was doing that for about 3 full years.
Oh wow, that's cool. That's like celebrity rock star stuff right there. I feel like that's what it was like the coolest hairdressers when I was coming up. That's what they did. It was either New York or Miami or somewhere in California.
The lady that owned that salon also owned the salon in the Hotel Del Coronado, which is a historic hair salon, if you guys aren't familiar. And that's where the idea was birthed, because she had a couple of hairdressers that were lived in New York as well, and then would come and moonlight at her hotel location to do like celebrity, you know, clients or whatever, I guess. Because it, yeah, who outrageous, like, right? Meanwhile, I'm like sleeping on my sister's couch when I go out there, but you know, it's totally glamorous, I'm sure. But you know, again, really looking back on it was probably feeding that beast inside of me that's like constantly seeking something outside of monotony, right? Like that chaos a little bit, and like, but also, how can I do a million things but still be doing the same thing, if that could make sense, right? Like, how can I do, well, makeup is kind of doing hair, so let me do some makeup on the side. Or like working in photo shoots is kind of like in this industry, right? But like, it's, you know, I always looking for these ways of like always still kind of being part of that. And also maybe like my anxiety of like not being productive, because like, well, I'm traveling and I'm getting to see my family, I'm getting to see my friends, but I also am working. So like, I don't have to feel like I'm not living some frivolous lifestyle where I'm like vacationing all the time. I'm working all the time. And
Well,
that.
how did this all lead to salon ownership?
So fast forward, I worked at that salon. That wasn't a great breakup. There was a big blow up with the owner, and I went to the last salon that I was at before I had a hair salon. I was there for about 10 years. At that time, at the very end, 2015, I think, is when Periscope became a thing, and I started doing Periscope, and I was on it all the time. And that's really where a lot of my original, like becoming an independent educator, that's where I met Thurston's. That's where I got to do, you know, a lot of things that led to where I kind of am now. You know, it is like that exit was also not great. There was a misunderstanding that I was gonna leave and take a bunch of stylists, and so I was pushed out. And so I left and I took a bunch of stylists. That's what my joke always, Kind of truly, that's how it happened almost. Like, I had a friend that was looking at some suites because that was an option, and she had been working there for a long time. And I went with her to go check them out with her. And it got back that I was planning this mass thing, and all the girls around me at this point, I had already had assistants of my own that I had grown and put out, and they had gone onto the floor and were helping that salon be even more successful. And they were all fired under me, under the idea that if I left, I was going to take them with me. And I was like, you know, the fact that somebody would be willing to do that. I mean, it's definitely lessons that have been learned of like how not to be. And that's what I can think. I want to say each step of this also, right? I think you can attest to this. Like, there's a lot of moments where there has been moments that, like, in the moment, I want to, you know, middle finger to the man and be mad at these other people that were put in place, those original Aveda stylists that I worked for in San Diego, or like, you know, every step along the way where I felt wronged in a moment, but also now as an owner and kind of like, I have my aha moments of like, okay, you know, with better communication would have helped me to understand from that of the worker bee in the salon. So I wouldn't have had so much animosity or built up resentment. But I would have helped me understand why certain decisions had to be made from a business perspective. And maybe I understand better now, like why things happened. I don't really love the way that they happened. But so all that to be said, 2018, we went out on our own. We started our salon in my basement. So backing up to that Periscope story, I used to broadcast live. I have a little studio in my house. And I would just do hair in there for my own friends and family and or mannequins, and I would use Periscope. I would broadcast on Periscope, and I was sharing information and education, and I got to be like known by people like Justin Anderson because he would follow me. It was wild. I was like, how is this even happening? Guy Tang, you know, all of those amazing people, because I was one of the early adopters of Periscope at the time. And then, like I said, David and Alexis. So my salon in my house was my safe haven in a lot of ways. Like, and so we got to go there. And so like, as soon as we were told that, well, it wasn't even, we weren't even told. I left the salon to go to the hair show, the Philly premiere show. They were doing the first ever Philly premiere show. And I left to go get packed up. And I was coming back to get those girls that had worked for me that were now stylists at that salon. And I get a frantic call that they had been fired publicly on the sidewalk in front of everybody. And I came back in, and nobody had said anything to me. I walked over to the owner, very ballsy of me, and I tapped him on the shoulder in the middle of a client. I said, let's go outside and chat. And so it was kind of like, I thought we were leaving as like, you know what, this is a total misunderstanding. Let's talk about this after the weekend. I've got to go and do this thing. And so meanwhile, I'm at this hair show, and I'm like, I don't know if I have a place to go back to. And turns out by the end of that weekend, I did not have a place to go back to, but I had my house to go back to. So everybody worked in overdrive. My girls all came to my house, and we cleared out the basement so we could actually accept clients. And
Wow.
it was so crazy. My studio that's in my basement is probably a little, it's probably the same comparable as a single suite in a Sola or something like that. So it worked, and people could chill on the couch. And I was so blessed to have clients. I remember one client going, I would come into a back alley if that's where you had to cut my hair. Like, I will follow you anywhere. And so much of that. So that's where we were. So that was my laboratory. That's my salon.
Wow.
And that's why the name, the laboratory, because it's always been like, it's my lab, it's in my house. So that's where we started 2018. We moved into a Sola. It was a two-chair Sola. We tore out all of the equipment. 200 square feet. We retrofitted it to fit three stations, and we had three chairs at a color bar, which we put a processing heat, you know, source so that it could kind of like orbit and heat a whole area. Actually, that's kind of funny. I stole that idea from BC at the time. He made this like heat cabana for his salon where he just like had heat lamps. And I was like, that's okay, so dope. If I heat this whole area, it could kind of like, you know, instead of having individual, because I had to maximize the space. And we were rocking and rolling. We did Like a lot of money in that little space. I was like, oh no, like we did a lot. It was remarkable. And we were just churning and burning. And we had them in and we had them out. And we had myself and two other stylists, and we would rotate chairs. And then we would have clients in the hallway. Like everybody knew us in that solo. Like there's clients walking up and down the hallways with foils in their hair. We were packed to the brim. People were sitting on laps and they were happy to do it. And then COVID hit, and you can't sit on laps to do hair anymore. You got to be 6 feet away from each other. And all of that happened. And so I assume this salon is inside a office building. I had heard of this before. I had heard of this when I was, even before I went into the solo, but I was like, I don't want to be in an office building. That's weird. That's so strange. And then enter like a pandemic where you don't want to be around people and you don't want people walking in your front door. And I was like, heck yes, an isolated space that we're like, no walk-ins. Like we have to vet every person. And we had, so we grew from 200 square feet to roughly over 1600 square feet. And we had three stylists. So everybody had like a 400 square foot zone all for themselves, which was
Nice.
incredible. And the rent was low, thankfully, and we use it however it was. It was very outdated. And then a year later, we were able to modify it and update it. And then just last year, we actually assumed 300 extra square feet from a unit next to us. So we've grown a lot. So here we are. That's a very long answer to your question, I think.
Nice. I mean, that's I love it. I love the details. I love it's a little bit of a roller coaster. I know it's a good makes it makes for good storytelling for sure. So what was I gonna ask you? Oh, I was just gonna go back for a second. You talking about being an early adopter of Periscope, and does that mean that you're an early adopter of AI or any other
So yeah, I
technology?
definitely, it's so funny because I am in a couple of like mentorship programs, like different coaching business programs now currently. And I remember coming into a group chat with them and one of them, and I brought it in and everybody's like, what is this thing? And then lo and behold, like later the owner made like a whole thing, as a lot of, we've seen a lot of people. So it's one of those things that I'm like, man, I wish I gatekept that. But I mean, I also know that when I started using AI in the very, very beginning days, I have stopped. I'm not using it as actively as I wish I was, because it has surpassed me already. So I know you just went to that big thing and they had a lot of AI stuff that they were talking about. And I'm super jealous watching all your guys' stories, you and Emily. So I am so sure that my knowledge of AI and my user ability of AI has, I already feel like a grandma trying to use it again. I'm like, you know, the originator. I'm like, nah, that's already been, it's already been reinvented seven times since the last time I picked it up to use it for anything. But I like to use it for, you know, writing scripts for things. I definitely like to use it. I like to encourage the girls to use it for helping for captions on social media and that kind of simple stuff. But I haven't gotten quite into some of the fun stuff like you guys with like photo, like I saw something, I think it was like harebrained, because we're the laboratory and they said like, oh, hair nerds, that's what it is, the hair nerds. They did like make a hair nerd, and then they like keep on expanding on it, and the model that came back was so dope. And I was like, gosh, I want all of those for my logo for my salon. But so like I need to play with it more. I know you're gonna have to school me in a one-on-one at some point.
Well, I'm scratching the surface. I got some ideas on how I'm going to use it, but a lot of the stuff I haven't really had a chance to sit down. There's a lot of video stuff that I want to do that is going to save me a ton of time and enable me to do even more what I want to do for the industry. So I'm excited about that. But how about Periscope? Are you still doing Periscope or any sort of streaming stuff?
So Periscope is not an
It's not
active
a thing
app
anymore.
anymore. I don't
Goes to
believe
show how much I know.
that. Yeah, see, hello, Grandpa. So Periscope was dissolved. Twitter bought it at one point, which we all know Twitter doesn't
Okay.
exist anymore. And then it was dissolved. Really, what happened was Periscope was the first live streaming app specifically. Facebook started to do it soon after, not soon, but after Periscope was getting really popular, Facebook started to do their live version. But if you remember back to when they rolled out their live, you could only do it if you were a celebrity. Because I remember one of the first ones was The Rock, of course. Like, who doesn't follow The Rock? And I was like, well, I'm just as cool as The Rock. Obviously, I need to be able to go live. And so once Facebook started doing the live feature for anybody, then Instagram, of course, came in with the live feature. And I believe that's kind of like where the demise happened. And, you know, I think that's our quest as people, is to like not have too many, you know, spinning plates and really a hyper focus on what type of social platform like kind of aligns with you as a person. And that kind of goes back to a lesson that I try to teach to a lot of kids and hairstylists in general, not even kids. Like, I was just teaching today at a salon in DC, and a lot of the stylists, I actually asked them to raise their hand. Many of them were 20 years seniors plus in the industry. And so social media, they're still like, I'm holding on strong. I don't need that thing. But Facebook, maybe they can handle. So I always tell anybody that's looking to utilize social media, especially for like, establish why. Why are you on here? What's your goal? For me, I'm an educator. So I want to speak to hairdressers, and I'm not taking clients anymore. So I can make sure that the language and the captions that I'm talking about are much more educational, and I'm going to speak to other hairdressers, because my goal at this point in my career is to sell myself to other hairdressers, to want them to come and learn from me. For my girls, I'm like, don't worry about reels. I understand virality is something fun. You want to be viral online because that makes, you know, the dopamine hits, and it's like, it makes you feel good. But you guys are trying to get clients. You need a still photo that somebody can come in. They don't have to wait for 15 seconds for the screenshot to like show you, because it's a video. Just take a still picture and have an online portfolio. That's what your Instagram should be for those people. And so then to break that down one more line further, I believe, so TikTok is a thing. We all agree that it's not going anywhere, even though they've tried to kill it. TikTok is global. Instagram is national, and Facebook is regional. And I think if you can think of those three platforms as that way, you got the outlier of Snapchat, because I do still think that kind of is something that you can use. LinkedIn is another one. They're all very usable places to put your work out there. And so all of that to be said, I understood that as I was doing Periscope, that live broadcasting, me being able to go on the fly, get engagement with the audience was something that I knew stood out a skill for myself that maybe some other people were not as natural to. I'm not as good at scripted. I'm not going to make a really beautiful aesthetic, you know, flat lay like some of the hairdressers that I love that have this crafted, you know, 9 grid on their Instagram. And it's like this whole thing. I am chaotic. I am all of those things. But the things that I do know, I know in my heart and soul, and I'm able to answer them on the fly. And having that engagement and that real time audience was something that was really good for me for Periscope. So now TikTok has a live feature, and I feel like that's probably where I'm going to start being hanging out a lot more on, actually. I've been doing it. I just unlocked it because I was one of the early adopters of TikTok because Gary V told us to. It was pre-pandemic. It was like me, Ursula Goff, if anybody remembers Ooh Goff, one of my friends, a Goonie. She's an amazing rainbow hair colorist. And then Philip Ring, Phil Does Hair, he's known for doing hair, men's hair replacements. And then again, I don't remember who else was on there, but at that time it was only 12-year-olds dancing on TikTok. Nobody was using it yet. And I was like, let me get on this thing. And quickly my videos went viral. I had two viral videos back to back. And that's why I know it was global, because a lot of them were, the engagement was from Russia and a lot of them from like India. And I had one video that had 46 million views, and I had another video, a couple of other ones that were tens of millions of views. The one that I had that had 46 million got reposted on Reddit, but I wasn't credited on it. And what's annoying about that, if you guys don't know, if you guys can get on the front page of Reddit, that's usually where people that write articles for other magazines like to comb, and they will use that as content to like, so hairstylists that I've known that have gotten posted on Reddit are often the ones that get offers for things like the Today Show and things like that. Some of those like BuzzFeed or, you know, Pop Sugar, all those things. So that was super disappointing. Last year in January, I got a text message that said, somebody trying to get into your TikTok And I was like, that's cute. And it was like the code. And I remember going, oh, that's cute. Somebody's trying to get on my TikTok. Here's your code. Don't share this with anybody else. You know, that whole thing. Get another one a little while later. I kind of ignored it. I was at my niece's wedding. And about an hour later, I got a text that said, somebody in Michigan with an iPhone 11 has logged into your TikTok. If this isn't you, please go to this link and like go through all this stuff. So I did. Went through the whole thing. At that point, I was already logged out. I went through every possible avenue that I could think of. I even had the from our boys that were trying to help me if they had any connections to get through. And at a million followers, my TikTok, I could not retrieve it again. So here we are. And at that point also, because when I got all those followers, businesses and brands were still kind of like weird. Like it was like, okay, that's cool. I had a couple of different people say, can you teach a class on TikTok? Because nobody knew right at the time. Mermaid was kind of starting to kind of come out there. And she was like a smaller, you know, she was the one of the first ones I remember making all those really fun and funny videos and stuff. And I just had oddly satisfying videos, me combing through rainbow hair and that kind of stuff. I think if I had that, like anything to share my story about that is showing up on my content would have maybe helped me a little bit more because my videos that were viral were not of me. It was my hands combing through hair. But it wasn't me, my face. So now I've had a very long climb. Also, the algorithm has changed dramatically on TikTok. Back then, I got one video that got me over 300,000 followers within like 6 hours. So like that doesn't happen anymore on there. So I am now at 1,000. You have to get a certain amount of followers to unlock the live feature. And last night, actually, I went live as I was painting a mannequin, and it was fun because I had a lot of people from those Periscope days that were like, oh my gosh, this feels like Periscope. And I was doing it. I think what I'm loving right now, I think, I don't know what combination, but I was having this thought the other day. I'm like, I don't know how to like articulate this or even why it's happening, but I feel like what's happening is those of us that were kind of becoming platform artists and getting these opportunities, this whole influencer language that was starting in the beginning of the BTC, you know, award show, the behind the one shot awards, you know, that was the very beginning days of like all of that kind of stuff and wanting to go to a hair show to meet these influencers, you know, and all of that stuff. I think that kind of died off for a minute. And then a lot of those people that were the original influencers, you know, Guy Tang, Rebecca Taylor, Glam Iris, you know, Jay Wesley Olson, Jenny Strebe, like, you know, we can go down the list. We all know who they are. We know who they are. These babies that are coming in my salon, they're like, who's that? What's a B scene? They don't even know. It's so wild. But what I think is cool is I've been removed from that stuff long enough to where it feels fun to come back to it, where at a certain point it was starting to feel like a job. So last night, turning on my camera and going live and having a ton of engagement from people and people that were excited to be in there and people that were excited to talk and to learn and to watch the process that I was doing was really cool. And I just really, really was like, okay, maybe enough time has passed to where we can do that stuff again. And it's going to feel new, if that makes sense, which I'm kind of excited for. I don't know if you've noticed any of that stuff, like those trends from 2015, 2016. Right, like fashion color, Kylie Jenner's hair, they're saying that that's kind of like part of that. I feel like maybe this is a time for those that to kind of come back a little bit.
That's interesting. I think that, you know, I know we're ran over on time. I think that diving into that a little bit more would be interesting. I will say this, I have noticed that it felt the what I have noticed is that color is like the thing on social media, like pops. It's like you could see it, and cutting never really seemed to be that big of a deal. You know, you go to the schools, I talk to a lot of hairdressers. I'm a cutting educator, and for a long time I worked at a salon as a cutting specialist. I do everything now, but still I teach cutting unless it's like on the job apprenticeship training.
Yeah.
And I felt like social media was never really a place for me. But now I feel like cutting is becoming and like precision. And I'm seeing a lot of like Joel Torres, or like that three, I think it's Three Education. Like there, I've seen people who are like cutters that are really bringing it back. But that's kind of what I'm seeing. I'm hoping that I'm right. I'm hoping that
I
the
think the
world.
trends, though, are finally circling back to that, right? Like, I feel like this is what I used to
That's a
say
good point, yeah.
with clients for fashion color. When they would say, like, oh, I want a haircut, I'm like, I don't want you to cut your hair because I want as much canvas, I want as much surface area to paint for the highest impact possible, right? And you think about too, in those early days, everything was melted and you wanted to see these like or line color. You need real estate to do that. You can't have a shattered, emo scene haircut and then to be able to make it read right for that. In now we're seeing more block color placement, exhibit A, that's going to work really well with those shattered haircuts and things like the butterfly cut and stuff like that. It's interesting to see how like color and cut always feels like it's almost like they can't work together in this really weird way. You're always going to see one focused more than the other, I feel like. But I definitely think, because you've been doing hair as long as me, right? We've talked about this before.
Yeah, 2002.
Yeah. So, I mean, cutting was massive when we were babies, like for
Yeah,
sure.
that's what it was all about.
No, I mean, like the amount of fucked up haircuts that I've had because they were cool, right? Like it's like, just wild. I mean, I have a picture of me that I had this German stylist that I worked with, and we did block color and he cut lines in my hair to expose the different layers of hair color. And that was in 2007, 2008. I mean, like that was wild. I mean, you don't see that yet. I don't think I see that as
Not
much.
yet,
But
no.
I think it's interesting too. The industry, when we were coming up and you go anywhere, you could do the hairdresser nod. You knew a hairdresser across the room. There was just a total uniform. Like there was, she had again a disconnected haircut, probably a long bang, some chunky highlights. Like they all had like they all looked the same. Maybe the male, like the men, and you just were wearing all black, probably. You guys all look like Aveda people, but I mean you guys didn't have a lot of choices, right? But maybe a man bun, but now it's not like that, right? I don't think that there's as much of that. It's interesting how there's like not to say divisive, but like it's about who you're around too, right? Like I always tease about the wide brim. Like, sorry guys, don't come for me. The wide brim boho hairstylist. I love them. I have friends that are that. The balayage specialists, and all that stuff. And that's not really what I do, but it's interesting to think that we're all hairdressers because I just always, coming up, it was like hairdressers are all one blanket thing. And now there's all this different, like these differences. The first time, back when Doug and Stevie owned Hugo Salon out in Kensington, and I went, they hosted Lala and hosted her for an updo, like a wedding updo. Well, we were just starting to do right at the time, or maybe it was just the butterfly circus. And KCO, Hair by KCO, was responsible for bringing all the models. And if you guys don't know who Hair by KCO is, she's like this goth princess. And she just, you cannot miss her in a crowd. But you also cannot miss her in a crowd of bridal specialists. And so there's like this crazy room, and Lala herself is very elegant. She's very Romanian and all those amazing things. But all these girls that were there to see Lala, and all of us that were there because of Casey, that had the hair color and the black and the whole thing. And that was one of the first times I remember sitting in a room of hairdressers and being like, wow, I don't belong here. Like we're hairdressers, but any other time as a hairdresser, I'm like, oh, we're all the same family. We're all the same thing. So all that to say that I think that haircutting has always been super important to me. I've always been super obsessed with haircutting. I am not at all what I would consider a craft hairdresser. I have one of my very best friends is a lead educator with Schwarzkopf. He's responsible for teaching their educators cutting. He's a very precision haircutter. We like to teach together a lot. And my clients once said, you guys teach together, but you guys are both, whatever. And I said, yeah, well, imagine we're both musicians, but he's like Mozart and I'm like Motley Crue. I believe that there's space for both of us in a lot of ways, but the amount of Adderall that it would take for me to perfectly execute a graduated Vidal Sassoon bob could never be worth it to me a day in life. I'm so sorry. I could never. So anyway.
That's great. I think that's I would say that that's a great place to wrap it up.
Yeah.
And I want to say thank you so much for coming and sharing your story. It was a pleasure to hear. It's so crazy how your story is sounds so familiar to me, and but not at all. Like at the same time, it's so crazy. It's like this is not anything next near my story, but why do I feel like it's so familiar? So thank you for sharing. As just to wrap it up, would you, if someone's watching this and they're an up and coming hairdresser, or they might be a little, maybe they're uncertain, someone's uncertain about their career or next steps or whatever, anything in that realm, would you like to kind of sign off with some pieces of advice?
So for somebody that's just like starting out, they're feeling like they're struggling a little bit in the
I would say in general, someone's starting out, yeah. And then maybe you can include if you
oh,
want.
Hold on.
If
Sorry.
you want, include a second piece of advice for someone who's, you know, is trying to figure out what their next step is going to be, either or both.
So I guess I think this will all come back to what we were talking about before. It was like, I say this to my girls all the time, like the extra credit always counts. And so being the one that's willing to do, to say yes, being the one that's willing to put in the extra credit hours is always going to count. And if anybody's feeling like, I want to say discouraged, but if you're starting out, like now's your time. And stamina is something that you will realize one day you miss wildly. So if you're young and you're starting out and you have that stamina and you have the ability to say yes, sometimes physically, you're never going to go wrong with the extra credit hours. And that I would say is the biggest, you know, amount of advice that I think best advice I would love to have heard when I was young.
I love that. That's so good. All right, cool. Well, I would love to have you on the show again in the future. And but for today, I just want to say thank you so much for coming
Thanks
on
so
and
much
sharing
for
your
having
story.
me. What a wild ride, huh, guys? I hope you guys followed that attention deficit. Sorry, one. Oh, thank you so much.
Absolutely.